Lesson 24. The Blessings of Work. Objective. Each young man will appreciate the value of work. Preparation. Materials needed. Scriptures for each young man. Pencils for marking scriptures. Before class, you may wish to assign some of the young men to read the quotations on work. Note. Nothing worthwhile is ever accomplished physically, intellectually, creatively, or spiritually without effort. The young men should leave the class with the idea that work is not a drudgery to be avoided, but an opportunity to grow, develop, serve, and progress. End of note. Suggested lesson development. Introduction. Young men presentation. Have the young men assigned briefly explain what each of the following quotations, all from the Richard Evans quote book, means. I never did a day's work in my life. It was all fun. Thomas Edison, page 43. God sells us all things at the price of labor. Leonardo da Vinci, page 44. Work is a spiritual necessity. Neil A. Maxwell, page 50. Each will find that happiness in this world mainly depends on the work he does and the way in which he does it. Brigham Young, page 50. The privilege to work is a gift. David O. McKay, page 46. Discussion. What would happen if everyone refused to work anymore? Have the young men discuss this for several minutes, giving specific examples of what would happen. Scripture reading and discussion. Read and mark the following scriptures. Genesis chapter 3, verse 19. Doctrine and Covenants, section 42, verse 42. Section 68, verse 30. Section 75, verses 28 and 29. How does the Lord feel about work? Quotation. There is no way of going through life without consuming someone's work, our own or others. We can't eat without consuming someone's work. We can't travel without consuming someone's work. We can't use any substance or accept any service without accepting someone's work. No matter what nature provides or what men are able to make machines do, work is always somehow involved in the process of bringing the final product to people. Richard L. Evans, The Everlasting Things, 1957, page 71. Work prepares us for greater responsibility. Quotation. Read the following statement by President Spencer W. Kimball. I've been grateful for the experience I had under the tutelage of my own father to wash with Castile soap the harnesses and grease them to preserve them. I learned to paint the picket fence, the water tank, the carriage shed, the granary, the buggy, and the wagon. And finally, the house. And since the days when I wore the occasional blister on my hands, I have not been sorry for those experiences. Ensign, May 1976, page 126. Chalkboard and discussion. What do you think were probably some of Spencer W. Kimball's reactions to the work he did as a boy? What do you think young Spencer Kimball learned from these experiences that helped prepare him to later fulfill his callings as a missionary, an apostle, and a prophet? Possible responses include accepting responsibility, finishing a job, following instructions, finding pride in accomplishment, serving others, and gaining skills. Summarize the responses on the chalkboard. What kinds of work do you do? How has work blessed you and your family? Character is strengthened by honest, hard work. Story and discussion. Read or tell in your own words the following story. No one in our Utah town knew where the Countess had come from. Her carefully precise English indicated that she was not a Native American. From the size of her house and staff, we knew that she must be wealthy. But she never entertained, and she made it clear that when she was home, she was completely inaccessible. The Countess always carried a cane, not only for support, but as a means of chastising any youngster she thought needed disciplining. And at one time or another, most of the kids in our neighborhood seemed to display that need. By running fast and staying alert, I had managed to keep out of her reach. But one day, when I was 13, as I was shortcutting through her hedge, she got close enough to rap my head with her stick. "Ouch!" I yelled, jumping a couple of feet. "Young man, I want to talk to you," she said. I was expecting a lecture on the evils of trespassing, but as she looked at me, half smiling, she seemed to change her mind. "Don't you live in that greenhouse with the willow trees in the next block?" "Yes, ma'am." "Do you take care of your lawn, water it, clip it, mow it?" "Yes, ma'am." "Good. I've lost my gardener. Be at my house Thursday morning at 7, and don't tell me you have something else to do. I've seen you slouching around on Thursdays. When the Countess gave an order, it was carried out. I didn't dare not come on that next Thursday. I went over the whole lawn 3 times with the mower before she was satisfied. And then she had me down on all fours looking for weeds until my knees were as green as the grass. She finally called me up to the porch. "Well, young man, how much do you want for your day's work?" "I don't know. 50 cents, maybe." "Is that what you figure you're worth?" "Yes'm, about that." "Very well. Here's the 50 cents you say you're worth, and here's the $1.50 more that I've earned for you by pushing you. Now I'm going to tell you something about how you and I are going to work together. There are as many ways of mowing a lawn as there are people, and the way may be worth anywhere from $0.01 to $5. Let's say that a $3 job would be just what you've done today, except that you would do it all by yourself. A $4 job would be so perfect that you'd have to be something of a fool to spend that much time on a lawn. A $5 lawn is, well, it's impossible, so we'll forget all about that. Now then, each week I'm going to pay you according to your own evaluation of your work. I left with my $2 richer than I remembered being in my whole life, and determined that I would get $4 out of her the next week. But I failed to reach even the $3 mark. My will began faltering the second time around her yard. $2 again? That kind of job puts you right on the edge of being dismissed, young man. Yes'm, but I'll do better next week. And somehow I did. The last time around the lawn, I was exhausted, but I found I could spur myself on. In the exhilaration of that new feeling, I had no hesitation in asking the Countess for $3. Each Thursday for the next 4 or 5 weeks, I varied between a $3 and $3.50 job. The more I became more acquainted with her lawn, places where the ground was a little high or a little low, places where it needed to be clipped short or left long on the edges to make a more satisfying curve along the garden, the more I became aware of just what a $4 lawn would consist of. And each week I would resolve to do just that kind of job. But by the time I had made my $3 or $3.50 mark, I was too tired to remember ever having had the ambition to go beyond that point. "You look like a good, consistent $3.50 man, she would say as she handed me the money. "I guess so," I would say, too happy at the sight of the money to remember that I had shot for something higher. "Well, don't feel too bad," she would comfort me. "After all, there are only a handful of people in the world who could do a $4 job. And her words were a comfort at first. But then, without my noticing what was happening, her comfort became an irritant that made me resolve to do that $4 job, even if it killed me. In the fever of my resolve, I could see myself expiring on her lawn, with the Countess leaning over me, handing me the $4 with a tear in her eye, begging my forgiveness for having thought I couldn't do it. It was in the middle of such a fever, one Thursday night, when I was trying to forget the day's defeat and get some sleep, that the truth hit me so hard I sat upright, half choking in my excitement. It was the $5 job I had to do, not the $4 one. I had to do the job that no one could do because it was impossible. I was well acquainted with the difficulties ahead. I had the problem, for example, of doing something about the worm mounds in the lawn. The Countess might not even have noticed them yet. They were so small, but in my bare feet I knew about them, and I had to do something about them. And I could go on trimming the garden edges with shears, but I knew that a $5 lawn demanded that I line up each edge exactly with a yardstick and then trim it precisely with the edger. And there were other problems that only I and my bare feet knew about. I started the next Thursday by ironing out the worm mounds with a heavy roller. After 2 hours of that, I was ready to give up for the day. 9 o'clock in the morning, and my will was already gone. It was only by accident that I discovered how to regain it. Sitting under a walnut tree for a few minutes after finishing the roll, I fell asleep. When I woke up minutes later, the lawn looked so good through my fresh eyes and felt so good under my feet that I was anxious to get on with the job. I followed this secret for the rest of the day, dozing for a few minutes every hour to regain my perspective and replenish my strength. Between naps, I mowed 4 times, 2 times lengthwise, 2 times across, until the lawn looked like a green velvet checkerboard. Then I dug around every tree, crumbling the big clods and smoothing the soil with my hands, then finished with the edger, meticulously lining up each stroke so that the effect would be perfectly symmetrical. And I carefully trimmed the grass between the flagstones of the front walk. The shears wore my fingers raw, but the walk never looked better. Finally, about 8 o'clock that evening, it was all completed. I was so proud I didn't even feel tired when I went up to her door. "Well, what is it today?" she asked. $5, I said, trying for a little calm and sophistication. $5? You mean $4, don't you? I told you that a $5 lawn isn't possible. Yes, it is. I just did it. Well, young man, the first $5 lawn in history certainly deserves some looking around. We walked about the lawn together in the last light of evening, and even I was quite overcome by the impossibility of what I had done. Young man, she said, putting her hand on my shoulder, what on earth made you do such a crazy, wonderful thing? I didn't know why, but even if I had, I could not have explained it in the excitement of hearing that I had done it. I think I know, she continued, how you felt when this idea first came to you of mowing a lawn that I told you was impossible. It made you very happy when it first came, then a little frightened. Am I right? She could see she was right by the startled look on my face. I know how you felt because the same thing happens to almost everybody. They feel this sudden burst in them of wanting to do some great thing. They feel a wonderful happiness, but then it passes because they have said, no, I can't do that. It's impossible. Whenever something in you says, it's impossible, remember to take a careful look. See if it isn't really God asking you to grow an inch, or a foot, or a mile that you may come to a fuller life. Since that time, some 25 years ago, when I have felt myself at an end with nothing before me, suddenly with the appearance of that word impossible, I have experienced again the unexpected lift, the leap inside me, and known that the only possible way lay through the very middle of the impossible. Richard Thurman, The Countess and the Impossible, Reader's Digest, June 1958, pages 107 through 110. Although the boy in this story was excited about getting paid so well for his work, was the money the most important thing to him? What is the message of this story? There is a sense of great accomplishment and joy when you do your best on any job or assignment. Encourage the young men to relate experiences they have had in which they have felt a sense of accomplishment after hard work. You may want to assign one or two young men to do this, if you know they have had such experiences. Relate personal experiences of your own. Conclusion. Challenge. Conclude the lesson by challenging the young men to make their lives, school training, and church activity worthy of receiving the $5 reward. Discuss specific ways they can accomplish those tasks, and discuss the reward they can expect to receive. End of Lesson 24, The Blessings of Work.